Setting Up Shop.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Setting Up Shop podcast. I'm your main host, Dan, a wood turner from the UK, and with me, as always, are the lovely Heidi, a potter from America.
Hello.
And Rasmus, a blacksmith from Norway.
Hello.
So this week, we've decided to sit back, relax, pull out the comfy chair, get the fire stoked despite it being the middle of June, and consider the creature comforts, the shop comforts that you might have in your workshop that aren't necessary to be there, but you just kind of add them in there to keep things going, keep yourself motivated, you know, just kind of trundle along, really. So I've split this into three sections, as we've done in the past. It can sometimes just help guide the conversation. We're going to talk about shop comforts that are visual, shop comforts that are audial, I believe is probably the correct term, or audio related, and tactile. And we're definitely talking about workshop comforts here, not anything else in any other part of anyone's buildings. We know what some people's minds are like. Just as an initial thought process, then we'll go with visual shop comforts. Heidi, because we had a conversation about this before, what would you say is one of your visual shop comforts that you kind of you sneak in there just to make things a bit better for you?
Well, I have that whole display set up of like all of my work and everything in my space, and my studio that we just finished building last year is pretty much a glass room. So I got, you know, really perfect light in there, which is such a boost from being in this room where I'm recording right now, where I had like one tiny window and one window off to the side that never really got a whole lot of sunlight from the trees. But my favorite part of that space is going to be the big wall of shelving that I put in to house like all of my products and my favorite pieces that I've made through the years and anything that like is for sale. It's like a shoppable wall, which, you know, a lot of people don't have that space in their space. Or like for Rasmus, you know, if he had a shoppable space, like there's soot and you know, all that ends up, you know, covering what you're trying to display. So I'm really fortunate that, you know, I'm able to keep the clay dust down and have that area off to the side that's not like in direct line of sight with the wheels, you know, flinging mud.
Yeah. So is that almost kind of like you said, you've used the word gallery. Is that almost like a, you know, early pieces when you were starting out through to now, or is it all just current pieces of like what you're currently selling? Or
yeah, I mean, it's like all my very best. It's all of my very best pieces. And then I do have a couple of spaces that are reserved for things that I've been gifted from other makers, whether, you know, I've gone to Maker Central and done the coin swap, the maker coin swap, or, you know, we have that event with another podcast called Tools with Fools that, you know, you get your little treasure trade items. Some of those are in there. But for the most part, most of the gallery is really like what I want to showcase. Like, this is the best of my work and the stuff that I'm most proud of, because sometimes you got to take yourself away from what you're doing and walk over and see like, okay, I've been fucking up for like 6 hours straight. I can produce something. And being able to walk over to that wall and be like, okay, yeah, I'm actually okay at this craft. It's helpful.
Yeah, I guess that's probably really powerful to still have it be predominantly your items that you're proud of rather than stuff from other makers who you revere or respect, and then you look at that and go, oh, I'll never be able to just be as good as that kind of thing. So it's in some ways more uplifting to be your own product. So it's not an ego stroke, it's very much a supporting,
yeah,
kind of like a silent support to yourself to prove you, look, you've done this before, you can do it again.
Yeah, it's nice reaffirmation when you see it, and it's also a good backdrop if I'm shooting anything or like yeah. If anybody's coming over and saying like, oh, I need a mug, or oh, I need a vase for a gift for a wedding or something, it's all already there. And I don't have to go digging yeah. through inventory in my garage, which I used to do, which was like a real bear. I have
flipping through photos in like a folder.
Yeah, exactly. I have other areas in the studio that are like high up that has like the repetitive stuff, like the Pittsburgh mugs and things that are just kind of like thrown up there because I need to have storage space for like overs and everything. So that's a lot easier. But from a showcase standpoint, that shelving system is really where it's aspirational and inspirational.
Sounds really nice. Wasn't the answer I was expecting, so that's quite
nice. Oh, you were thinking electronics.
Sorry?
Were you thinking the Google Home?
Yeah.
I have a Google Home too, which is great. And I get to watch videos and talk to it, which is the best part of it. Because like a TV, like some TVs have the, you can press the remote for the audio and command the TV. But with the Google Home, I can just command it while I'm throwing and be like, oh, I don't like this show. Skip ahead or, you know,
Yeah. Watch
something else.
And I was going to ask how that would work with the with getting your hands so covered in clay and stuff. But yeah, no, that makes sense. Rasmus, if you had to think, what creature comforts or shop comforts sort of a visual nature would you say you've got in your workplace? I've just got images of like various swords and axes embedded into a wall.
Me
like,
too.
It's just kind of, you know, next to the pelt of a bear that you casually killed one winter when you were seven.
Yeah, like you normally do on our way to school. I also like how they have like a display wall, a display corner. But I do have the problem of a lot of dust settling on it every once in a while, usually related to the amount of grinding I tend to do. But I did actually recently fix all of that up again after like the recent spout of barkits, and also added onto it by having these silhouette coat racks that I have. I put those up on the wall as well. So now I have like the Final Fantasy one, and I have the Lord of the Rings one and the Star Wars one, sort of hanging above each other. Next to the shop corner, which is kind of cool. But I do have one thing that I think is really nice and cool, and I want to call it like a blacksmith's pinup calendar because it's just really cool pictures of ironworks.
Okay, that doesn't sound anywhere near what Heidi and I were thinking it was.
I was picturing my grandfather's old shop with the actual pages from the pinup magazines.
Yeah. See, I was assuming it was a random bunch of like friends who were blacksmiths in a calendar charity.
Please tell me that one exists.
Clothed, like, you know, just like
usual. Like the Paul Jackman calendar.
Yeah.
No, there's this Czech photographer, Viktor Masha. I think it's pronounced anyway. He has taken a lot of really good pictures, traveled the world, documenting like ironworks, iron melters, slag works and coke works, and like all of these like heavy, really sort of black industry facilities all around the world, trying to sort of document it before they got torn down or shut down and things like that. So he's put together a couple of years ago, he put together a really nice calendar. And the brilliant thing he did is that he didn't put in like any like sort of Monday is the 5th kind of thing. It's just like February and then a list of all 27, 29 dates on the bottom. So I've used it for 1 year and then I turn it around and start over again and keep hanging it up in the shop.
Nice.
So yeah, I think that's a really cool goodie. I like it. I don't think anyone else really coming in notices it at first, but the shop corner draw a lot of people's eye. And if I have like someone coming in, like a client waiting for me to talk to them or something, and I'm in the middle of like a big heat on the power hammer, more often than not, they wander over to the shop corner and they have a little bit of look. Sometimes they even buy extra stuff. And that's nice. That's kind of nice.
Yeah. Yeah. That does sound cool. I think for me in my shop, my two things, one R is good English.
Really good. Are you English having a stroke?
No, I'm all right.
Okay.
That's fine. For our audio listeners, I just put both arms up and they were fine. So it's really good. No, I've got my cabinet where I keep all my wood finishes in. So it's a lockable cabinet, which is fire retardant. It's not fireproof, but it's, you know, it's one of those things. It's probably a health and safety specialist thing that just in case anything was to thing, it would contain it or reduce the, slow it down or whatever. Anyway, that's covered with stickers from a wide variety of different makers that I presume I've met, or maybe they just threw a load of stickers on the table at Maker Central 1 year and I went, oh, that's cool. And that, so that's covered in that. I've also got up there, there's a couple of letters from people who, when I've done like a sticker swap with someone like Red or Brett, or like if I've joined up to Brett's Patreon and he sent stuff out, so they're all like magnetized up onto that as kind of like a continuing thing. And speaking of Patreon, just to let everyone know, so we do have a Patreon account, and as of today we will be recording like a 15-minute after show that will only be available to people who do the paid Patreon subscription thing. And if you're really, really quick when this episode's come out, you might get in before I put the rate up to $5 a month. It's currently $3 a month. But just saying that, you know, that's coming. I happened to mention that whilst also talking about things that visually stimulate the workshop.
Highly shameless plug.
I don't know what you're talking about. It was seamlessly unplanned. So the other thing that I have got, which I've got a bit of wall space in my workshop that's kind of dead space because it's very close to being behind the wood burning stove. So there's a lot of heat that gets generated and bounces off that wall. So I couldn't really put any tools or stock or anything there that I really worried about. So I actually hung up like my first three cigar box guitars I made, which got me really into woodworking and then followed me on the journey that ended up with me doing wood turning. And, you know, nine days out of 10, I'll walk past, I won't even glance at them. But just every now and then, you'll just be like doing something and they'll just sort of remind you out the corner of your eye of where you started and like, you know, how far you've come along and all that kind of thing. So I find those quite visually inspiring as well as being sort of surrounded by the reminders of people that I've met along the way and most of whom thankfully are still with us and are still making and are doing some really cool stuff and that, you know, helps you feel part of being a community rather than just a lone worker who's sort of slogging their way through something or whatever the case may be. That sounds pretty cool overall for you guys. And so if we move on then, so what this is, I imagine, is going to be a fairly consistent between me and Heidi, but probably not so much for Rasmus, but some form of shop comfort audio. I'm presuming, Heidi, you have a full surround sound system for your Google tablet. And, you know, so you can pump some really hardcore tunes out there. I'm not actually
some Rage Against the Machine.
Nice.
Oh, okay. Well, I was sat there thinking, I know what music you've played in the past, but I'm not sure what you would actually choose to listen to while throwing.
Incubus, Rage Against the Machine.
Okay. Nice. Queens of the Stone Age.
And then folk music.
Yeah. And then a bit of MJ and
yeah. I've got a just one of the Google speakers sound systems that my space is only like 20 by 10, so it's not massive by any means. It's not like a big shelter or anything. So I don't really need like a full room system. So I've got the Google Home, which has the screen on it that I can position either in front of my desk area or in front of my wheel, and then I've got the speaker that I can project the sound there as well. And a lot of times it ends up being like I'm just watching documentaries and things on the screen, but if I just really want to zone out, like I'm typically listening to, depending on my mood, I'm typically listening to like Patty Griffin and some other like lighter fare. But every once in a while, with the turmoil that's happening in the country, I throw a little rage on, and it feels good to like wedge clay with Rage Against the Machine playing, and you know, or I have to like really work the clay, or like I'm slamming the clay down on the slab table and trying to work air bubbles out, works some anxiety out too at the same time. But yeah, that's my stimulating audio.
Just a thought after hearing your stimulating audio, the 15-minute after party thing is going to be our individual playlists of choice in the workshop.
Nice.
Which I thought could be quite interesting. So for those of you who are fascinated or interested and will just want to add some new bands or tunes to your own playlists, we'll talk about that on the Patreon after show.
Nice.
Rasmus, what, you know, other than the sound of a power hammer beating in rhythm, what would be your audio shop comfort?
The sound of a power hammer. The roar of a fire. I have recently invested in a really nice set of like Peltor 3M air defenders with Bluetooth and microphone and everything.
Oh, I thought you were going to just say the sound of silence is what you were going for then. But okay, yeah, carry on.
No, because I listen to a shit ton of podcasts. So okay. I got myself someone with some active noise cancelling and a microphone that is good enough that I can actually talk on the phone while running the power hammer.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
Which is always really surprising because like, is this okay? Can you hear me? It's like, yeah, are you doing anything?
So it's better than the IsoTunes? Because for a while, weren't you rocking the IsoTunes for a while? In the
Yeah, I was using the IsoTunes a lot, but also I would just wear them out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a pair that lasted me 14 months and they have a 12-month warranty. And then I was like, okay, I'm trying something different now.
Yeah, that's what we've been running into.
But granted, I used and utterly abused mine.
Oh yeah.
I averaged like 40 hours of active listening a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the iCTunes just weren't able to really keep up. And the charging port would going at after a while, the springy bit over your ear is getting a bit stiff and work hardens. So it's like, and then the phone plugs, you need to replace them every once in a while. So it's like, there's enough things now that's kind of annoying me that I want to try something else.
Are the ones you got over the ear, like big muffs or?
Yeah, yeah. That's a big sort of clock-like things on your head.
Cool.
But also, like, they cost four times as much as the iCTunes. So hopefully they will last me a while. But I know I am very hard on the tools because just the environment I live in.
Yeah, makes sense.
I love the fact you say that you live in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, you don't physically live there. But yeah, you are there more than you are at home. So yeah, it's the environment you live in rather than the environment you work in.
Especially if you're counting waking hours, I am not at home at all. I come to sleep, eat, and podcast.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair enough. I mean, mine's a lot simpler version. Mine's literally, I've got a single little, like, Bluetooth speaker.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a Victrola.
No. little Bluetooth speaker, which means I can carry it from one end of the workshop to the other. And I mean, it feels a bit redundant in some ways because more often than not, I'll turn it on, I'll get it going, and then immediately I'll turn on like my vacuum chuck pump and like the extractor for sanding. But when I turn those off, then there's still noise going. I really struggle to work in a silent room. Like even if you're doing some like nice wood turning where you've got like the hiss of the wood coming off or something like that, I still need just like that background noise level knocked out. And you know, that will be, again, much like you said, Heidi, a variety of different music, which you can hear later if you tune in to the there we go. The Patreon account. I think I've laboured the point enough on that one for this episode. But yeah, I also have a couple of pairs of iCTunes and various types of stuff. So sometimes if I know I'm going to be doing a lot of machining that day, I'm going to be processing a lot of timber, I will just plug those in. Much like yourself, Rasmus, I might listen to a podcast or an audiobook or something like that. I listened to John Cleese reading his autobiography a little while ago, and that was really, really good because obviously he knows exactly where the pause is and what the stories are about, and more often than not was making himself laugh. so that was really good. So you're not listening to like an actor or a voice actor reading someone else's story. He was telling his own, and you could hear him like reliving the moments as he was going it and making himself laugh really hard. So that would be a free recommendation for anyone, is John Cleese's audiobook, which is free if you've got Spotify Premium. I'm not sure where else it would be. So the final sort of topic I had on there then, which doesn't mean it's going to be the end of the episode, we're only 20 minutes in, we've got plenty more to talk about, would be I've put in there like a tactile thing. So something that is specifically in there because either you like the way it physically feels, or a sense of touch, or something that you've got more of a physical connection with. So I'll give you guys a pause for a moment to think about that. And while you do, I'll then reveal the secret fourth option that we were going to talk about, which neither of you really know about, and may just end up being my thing, although I suspect that Rasmus has got some of this as well, and that is, what's in your workshop library? Because I know very few craftspeople who are taking it seriously who haven't got at least a couple of books floating around, and I don't mean like novels to read on a lunch break, I mean like reference material for stuff. Rasmus is currently looking up his Notion spreadsheet to see where his categorized bibliography states what is it currently in which location and which edition he's possibly got.
I feel called out.
But whilst you have a think about that in the moment, Heidi, have you considered what like a tactile thing, if you even have one in potentially in your workshop?
You know, I don't have anything that's like a stress reliever because like I'm using my hands the whole time. So I'm thinking like I do have a tool that helps me that I do have stored in my studio. And it's one of those like massagers that has the head on it, almost like a Sawzall. And it's super helpful for like my arms and my legs. If I've been standing for a really long time, working for a really long time, and I just need a break. And it's, I guess it's tactile, but I can't think of it. Like, I buy a certain type of sponge for when I'm throwing because I like how it feels versus just like those cheap yellow sponges. They're like $14 a piece, whereas the the yellow sponges are like 20 cents. And it feels better in my hands when I'm throwing, and it's thinner, and it smooths the clay out a bit better, and it's more frivolous than it is anything.
Yeah.
Is it real sponge or still synthetic?
No, it's like man-made. It's kind of like microfiber. It's like a squishy microfiber sponge that I really like. But I'm not going to plug it because we're not being sponsored. So
yet. But we might need to reach out to the sponge company.
Yeah. I mean, there are things.
I would love it if our first sponsor was a sponge company.
That'd be great. I mean,
like, I suggest you look into that a bit, Heidi. See if you can.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know how woodworkers or blacksmiths would need the sponge, but definitely matter.
Blacksmiths would, but especially if it's a bit abrasive, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's not super abrasive. It's more like microfiber. Like, it's not going to take a whole lot of stuff off. But it has this quality to it that it doesn't hold a whole lot of water.
So that might work really well for applying wood finish.
Yeah.
Because it's not soaking it all up and then wasting it. So maybe we need to acquire a few more of these sponges and get some content.
I could send you some. I think they're a US-based company, but they might sell.
Well, again, I'm coming over for MakerCamp.
There you go. I'll bring you some samples.
Yeah. I'm going to have like room in a suitcase to take everything back with me.
Yeah. But that Therogun, it's like really amazing though. If you're if you're old like me and you forget to stretch.
Yeah, we've got one here. And it's not a case of forgetting to stretch. Let's be honest, none of us bother stretching. And I agree with you on like, and probably the same with Rasmus, like the forearms. Like every now and then, like if you do quite a long session of something you're not used to doing necessarily, or like you might be working with a harder clay or for me a denser timber or something, you'll just be like, I probably need to do something to like work the knots out of these.
Yeah. Usually my shoulders, especially if I'm pushing down on like a really heavy, larger volume of clay, but my wrists, my forearms, you know, just having a massage tool to like kind of work some of that out.
Yeah.
When Ben's not around.
What about you, Rasmus? What sort of tactile type thing might you have in your workshop?
I think it might be borderlining what sort of thing you're thinking of, but I really enjoy the two hammers I bought when I was in America last. One from Cliff Dufton and one from John Ariani.
Yeah.
Also, I tried to buy from only one of them, and then John came over and just stared at me into submission until I bought one of him too. So I was like, yeah. and like, they're two wonderful guys. They've been working together and forging together for years now. So it's like, it's really fun to see how two people have learned to forge the exact same hammer and how different they come out.
Yeah.
And I really like that. So I use them for completely different things, even though they have the same kind of shape, but they have different profiles on everything and they have the same weight. So it's like, it's still sort of a heavy-ish hammer, but it's like something I wouldn't have bought if I weren't in the US and had been like maybe illegally selling knives and roses at Maker Camp.
I very much doubt you were illegally selling anything at all, Rasmus.
It was a donation for your trip.
I'm sure it was donations towards your trip and exchange of favors. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I quite like those two answers. I must admit, I asked this question. I didn't even stop to think what I might have in my workshop that would fulfill that kind of thing. I mean, there is a weird one. As we all know, as a wood turner, I like to stroke wood. So there's always going to be pieces of wood around me. Oh, look at that. This just feels lovely. I do have in my workshop, and this is completely unnecessary and takes up space that you shouldn't necessarily lose in a workshop when you're at home with it. I have a seat that I made out of an oak church pew that was 6.5 feet long, and I shortened it. I chopped the end off one, I cut a load of wood out, and as I was doing it, I thought, I can't just let this all just go to bits. So I've shortened it, so it's now wide. It was initially wide enough for me to sit on and have enough room next to me for the cat to sit next to me as well. The cat, who has unfortunately gone to play with the big knitting ball in the sky. So it was, but that I was still, it's right by the door. So I'll walk through or I'll walk out and I'll just kind of run my hand over the shoulder of it or something, because it's got a very, it's so old. I have no idea what age it is, but it's like, you know, it's properly aged oak. It's over 100 years old. And the finish on there is still there, and it's got like the burnishing on it from like the thousands of people whose hands and clothes have brushed against the ends as they've got in and out of the pew. And it's just got that kind of like connection back to history of people who have been in the village that I'm living in. That's where it's come from. The church pews from that church, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And if I ever leave this area, I'll probably have to try and sell it to someone from the village to make sure it stays here.
Yeah.
And if no one wants it, then I will take it with me. But yeah, so that for me is kind of like it's a comfort because there's a place to sit with a cushion on it. And I mean, let's be honest, it's currently used as a dumping ground for a load of kit that I've got nowhere else to put. But I don't need it in there. And actually, if I didn't have it there, it'd give me more space around my planer. But yeah, it's just got that little thing. So then, for our fellow bibliophiles and people like Jessie Ueda, who won't ever listen to this podcast, so she's confidently told me.
Never listen. Wow.
No, that's being very harsh. She doesn't listen to any podcasts. So it's not a specific victimization of us, but she just doesn't listen to them, which is fair enough. But as a former librarian, as she would be, I'm sure if she did listen to part of any episode, this one she would appreciate. So come on then, Heidi, what do you reckon? You've got, is it textbooks you've got in there? Have you got reference material in there? Have you got anything like that in there at all?
I mean, I have a pretty extensive library of throwing and glazing and, you know, those types of books. One book is a recommendation from you, and it was Turned Boxes.
Oh, okay.
40 Inspiring Boxes by Expert Makers. And it was something that you had turned me on to because... pun intended, because I was trying to get better at making lidded vessels. And there were a lot of really cool things that this book offered as far as different shapes and different ways to build a gallery and, you know, build, you know, the seat that the lid sits in and everything. And it was super useful for that period of time. A book that just delivered a couple of weeks ago is this, it's called the Pottery Notebook. And it's by Kara Lee Ford. And basically, it's basically just a journal. It's got gridded pages where you can like draw your designs and things off of it. It has different prompts for like, make sure that you write down the volume of the item, especially if you want repeatability. So it's got, you know, the weight of the clay used, what height you threw it to, what depth and what width, and then how you finished it. And, you know, what the sizes were after you finished it. So you can kind of gauge your shrinkage and everything because pottery, this is definitely for potters and not necessarily anybody else. But it's been a nice little companion guide. In the back, there's like additional kiln notes and firing records, which is super helpful. Historically, I kept a lot of this information in a Google Doc. But I'm finding just the manual entry into the book a little bit more, I don't know, comforting and more interesting. It more, again, like the back to that tactile word.
Yeah, you're probably more likely to reminisce and like pick up an old journal. Oh yeah, I remember, and flip through the pages than you are to open an old Google Doc.
Yeah.
And like...
and you can't draw pictures in Google. Like the Yosemite vessels that I was making earlier this year, I sketched out, you know, what I was hoping to carve and, you know, some additional information there that, you know, if I plan to make these multiple times or if there's something within that technique that I learned, I have it written down here so I can always revisit it. Yeah. And it's just really quick to be able to like skim through the pages. Like here's Ben's knife box that I made him. And like I put in there like what went well, what didn't go well, you know, that there was a cracked corner and, you know, what could have caused that. But this is definitely more for the one-off projects that I do than it is for, you know, the stuff that's like I'm constantly making, like the mugs and things for businesses. This is definitely, I think I'm reserving it for myself for like the things that are more experimental and exciting for me.
Yeah.
But I have like, other than that, My Favorite Murder, the podcast I really like, they wrote a book talking about how they started their podcast, and it's really funny. I have it in audio form too, but I also got the physical book, and I'm working on a piece for them because it's their 9-year anniversary, and ceramics is 9 years. So
nice.
That's pretty much my library.
Do they know, or is this a big drop of?
No, a bunch of ceramicists were sending them stuff, and we all got on board at the same time. I'm just a little late to the game because most people sent their stuff in March, and I'm still ideating. Yeah. Especially after seeing what other people made, I'm like, ooh, I have to up my game.
Raz.
I want all the books.
So specifically in your workshop, not the ones around you right now, and stop looking over at your four-shelf bookcase that I vaguely remember seeing when I was there.
Honestly, I don't really keep that many books in the shop for my sake.
Hmm.
But I do have a lot of books currently in the web shop and part of the shop corner and all of that.
So pick three that are your books that you would recommend. Heidi's basically done the same. So we'll stick to three. We'll open it out so they can be at home with you as well.
One that I really like. Well, okay, let's start differently. What we call the Bible in Norwegian blacksmithing is the best instructional blacksmithing book so far written, in my opinion. It has a bit of everything. It also includes like a fair bit of talking about the community of blacksmithing and the benefits of traveling abroad and meeting people. It was written by Håvard Bergland. It's called Kunsten å smi in Norwegian, and it's the art of blacksmithing, roughly speaking. It has been translated into a bunch of languages, so it's available abroad as well. But yeah, if you want sort of that Norwegian take on blacksmithing and metalworking, this is a really good book for that.
Okay.
Spanning like everything from forging like axles and wheel hubs for old carts to axes and fire pokers and knife making knives and yeah, all of that Norwegian style.
So for those unaware, some of you who are aware may have picked up that he said the best written book on blacksmithing in Norway so far.
Yes.
this may be a subtle hint towards a project that Rasmus has been working on for a couple of years now, on and off.
Yeah.
Which may or may not be a book on how to do blacksmithing in Norway.
It might very well be.
Who knows? Very well be. So just for those of you who weren't aware of that already, sort of like keep that earmarked and maybe occasionally drop him a message via email or Instagram to kind of keep giving him the nudge that, you know, hey, you know you're busy with all this other stuff that's making money and paying bills. Don't forget this other thing you were also doing. Because, you know, you've got so much time, Rasmus.
Oh, yeah. Minutes to spare every day.
So other than that book, what would be your other two?
I'll fetch one because I need to see the name.
Oh, okay. Well, this is fair enough. We can do a little bit of filler for this brief section. So, there we go. It was that
because
much
I know where it is. You don't need to wait.
He knows exactly where it is. It fits his hand.
It's right
perfectly
beside his bed.
Is it going to fall open on certain pages? I can't see what that gold embossed writing looks like.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so
how to pillage a number of... Oh, no, sorry.
Ironwork notebooks.
Thomas Wilson's Ironwork notebooks.
So
sounds cool.
This is basically a collection of sketches from Thomas Wilson. So the entire book is just organized into concept sketches of just a lot of different things that he made
audio listeners, Rasmus is holding up a book and opening pages of some really cool looking ironwork and forging stuffs. And they do look cool. They do concept sketches. I can understand how that would be quite interesting. Cool. Check out those grills.
Can you say that?
Yes, because that's what we were looking at was grills.
I mean, this is the book I go to for inspiration. If I have a customer that wants something unique and special, I go to this book and I just look through it. And
steal from someone who's already done it, like every good artist.
Inspiration. I'm inspired by. And it's just all kinds of different really cool things.
So, they look like Tim Burton illustrations.
Yeah, that one did. It really did. But like, yeah, there's a chapter on weather vanes. And there's a chapter on chairs. There's gates and railings. And he's got like some of these massive sort of second imperialism style and everything. So the problem with blacksmithing in Norway is that we lost a lot of tradition from the 80s, 1980s and onwards. So that the blacksmithing book I mentioned previously, Kunsten å smi, it's sort of the first attempt at sort of revitalizing blacksmithing in Norway. And he did a really, really fucking good job at it. The guy who wrote it was also the last quote-unquote apprentice of the old blacksmithing school system we had in Norway.
Right.
So like he is trying to bridge that gap we have. This book is a lot of British ironworking.
Yeah.
And we don't have anything that resembles what you can see in the UK, Germany, Sweden, and Denmark. We lost a lot of that. We still have some, but most people, they think of whatever is related to the old churches we have. And we still have a lot more than that. But if we don't have this vast amount that the rest of Europe had.
Okay.
For me, this one by Tom Wilson, that is sort of the just a collection of so much inspiration.
Okay. And your third one? Standby Cooler.
This one I picked up most recently. It's The Viking Blacksmith.
Ah, yes.
Written by a guy quite recently. And it is also the one that I'll probably be adding to the web shop next. I haven't been reading it yet, but leafing through it, this is more like a practical archaeology guide to Viking blacksmithing.
Okay.
Including recipes on how probably, maybe, most likely, some of the old stuff was made.
Interesting.
Cool.
So yeah, this is the one I'm looking most forward to diving into next, but I haven't read it yet, so it's sort of tentatively good recommendation.
Cool. So it's you know, so listeners, as you can clearly tell, there's an element of passion from all three of us when it comes to books, and because at the end of the day, this is about our craft, right? This is steering away from running things as a business, but it's looking more towards the stuff that is the reason why we're doing this. Like the passion, the interest of like, look at the shiny thing, look at how cool this is, I wonder how they did it, and then, you know, how can we get to do something similar? So my three books, one's not actually arrived with me yet, I ordered it last week. So one is called Simple Forms and Shapes, and any aspiring wood turner and potentially potter who is wanting to look at classical shapes that are in architecture and like old manor houses and stuff, particularly in Britain and Europe, that are inspiring. This guy, Stuart E. Dyas, D-Y-A-S, I think it is. He wrote this book, and it's basically like trace outlines of shapes and he's categorized them from like columns, fountains, vase, pillar. And he's just literally written down, like, and they're just these drawings with all the things on there, and they've not got dimensions or anything on them, but that you can see the scale, you can see how the form of the shape works at those different things. And so I found those quite inspirational and useful, particularly when I'm doing some like spindle work for people. The second one is a book that may or may not be me doing partial research for a future project. And the book is called Sharp, S-H-A-R-P, and that's all it is. Now, that book, written by, I can't remember the name of the author because I'm not as confident with it, but that book appealed to me because the guy's basically gone out of his way to compile together the techniques to sharpen pretty much anything. So it's not about, oh, this is how to ultimately sharpen a knife or how to ultimately sharpen your woodworking tools. It's like, no. If you want to learn how to sharpen a saw, if you want to learn how to sharpen gardening tools, if you want to learn how to sharpen a knife and woodworking and wood turning and wood carving and anything that requires an edge to be put on it, he has compiled all of this together in like a 20 millimeter thick book with really good photos and drawings and stuff on it. And that's definitely one that is kind of anyone who works with an edged tool on anything and has ever wondered how to put the edge back on, it's really well laid out, really well written, and just a really good reference book. You know, you just like flip through and go, oh, right, so that's how they would have done that, that kind of thing. And the final one, as I say, which I haven't read yet, but I hadn't realised until I looked at the title just now how relevant it is to all three of us here. It's called Principles of Design for Furniture, Pottery and Metalwork.
Oh.
And it's actually sold by, it's a Lost Art Press book, Heidi, so it's probably much more widely available for you guys in the States, but I got it over here in the UK. And I've been looking a lot more recently with thinking of my future in turning about principles of design, because I don't have a lot of design experience, and trying to work out, you know, things like the golden ratio and what should and shouldn't go places. And given that I've got customers coming to me wanting a thing, you know, the age old question of, can I have some art, please?
I don't know what I want.
Yes. Yeah, but they don't know what they want. And you've got to try and recommend things to them that may or may not work. And obviously, you don't want to spend a lot of time prototyping stuff and it all just looks like garbage, and then they're not going to necessarily pay for that time, or they lose faith in you as a creative person.
I need to buy this book right now.
it just really jumped out at me as this looks like a good reference one for the library. But I've got many, I've got 3.5 shelves of books in my workshop, dominantly relating to wood turning or wood identification. I've got a couple on like wood carving and a couple of other things like that, but they are predominantly based around those topics. But the reality being is that most of them I will look at once or twice every 2 or 3 years, but they're there when I need them. And then there'll be others that I keep going back to that I've already referenced. Because the problem is yeah, you can find videos and things, you can reach out to people via social media and stuff, but sometimes you just like, it's there, it's in paper, it's not scrolling past or needing refreshing or anything like that. It's just physically there and easier for you to see.
Oh.
So I prefer to have those kept in there.
I like books.
I like big books and I cannot lie.
Somehow, I were not surprised.
Well, it was the way you said it. It was just yeah. The way you said it. Also as well, I mean, Rasmus mentioned earlier a couple of blacksmiths, Cliff Dufton and John Ariani. And it sounds very much like we need to have them both on for an interview at some point and just to be able to call an episode Hammer Time and talk to them about their journeys going along from where they started across to here, which I know they've spoken to a few people about in the past on other podcasts, but we can talk about it much more from our perspective. If that sounds interesting to you, whether or not you are a blacksmith or not, please make sure you let us know via some form of Instagram message or personal message if you know us that well, email, whatever you like. We'll probably still do it anyway, but it would be good to know whether or not our listenership wants to. Other notices then. We're nearly there to open the web shop for the merch. We're very, very, very nearly there. Like, samples have been ordered. We're just waiting for them to be delivered to us. And so get yourself in anticipation for that. There will be some stuff that is just, you know, standard logo branded, which would be nice. But we look forward to when the merch shop is open, people buying it and then sending us lots of pictures of where they are from around the world wearing it and like telling people about it and that kind of stuff. That'd be amazing. Whether or not you're just in your web shop and your workshop even, you know, or you're just hanging out with a bunch of friends. If we can get like a stag or a hen do, like all wearing one of our t-shirts, that would be pretty awesome. Like before they go to some form of forging class or something, or a pottery class, that would be pretty fun. Or some other weird and wonderful thing. And I'm sure we can work out some form of prize for like the most original or photo that makes us laugh the most or something like that of people who have bought our merch. In a way to support us. So hopefully you guys are looking forward to that. We're trying to make sure there's a wide enough range of stuff there that there'll be something for everyone, no matter what your craft is. But other than that, yeah, I did drop it an awful lot in there today about our Patreon account. It's currently, if you're still listening to this fairly recently, it's currently $3 a month. That will entitle you to the extra after show. We're not intending shortening the standard episodes. They will be as they are. So if you want to listen to that and you don't feel like supporting us, you just want the free stuff, we get it. That's fine. Not a problem at all. Just keep listening. Tell other people. We appreciate it. You know, money's tight for everyone. But if you do feel you're able to throw a little bit our way, that would also be appreciated. It just helps pay the sort of the annual fees for getting this published and gradually work towards Rasmus's ultimate goal of paying someone else to do the editing so that he has more time to go swing dancing.
Yes.
Or reading his books. So yeah, really, that's about tying it up for today. And that was quite a nice little jaunt through some of the things in our workshops. I'm sure people have got some other things as well. We won't talk about shop pets as we're now down to only one of us having one, unfortunately. But we hope you have enjoyed this episode. And for those of you who will join us on the after show, then we'll look forward to you listening to us in a few minutes' time. But from the three of us, that's myself, Dan, at tarrants.co.uk, Rasmus at rasmuslowen, and Heidi at whitehall_pottery. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
See you.
Bye-bye.